Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to American Conservative Party Radio. My name is Tracy.
And I'm Bill.
And we're going to give you a week's worth of conservative. Oh, my God, are you crazy?
Yeah.
Where things are going nuts.
Oh, man, I'll tell you. Just people are going nuts.
I want to start off with a little bit of small talk.
Okay.
Galoop is back.
Yes!
I think I said that. I think I actually brought it up on the show that he had taken off on Monday night. We got him back on Thursday.
Cool.
So, none the worse for wear. A little sheepish was he walking around, going like, okay, yeah, that was a stupid idea. I get it. So, he hasn't taken off running ever since. So, but, you know, I do a fair amount of online stuff, and I've been online. I got on the internet in 1987.
Yep.
I had an internet, a Gopher account, account through the University of Illinois at Chicago when I was a student there in 87, and was able to do some stuff. And I had been BBSing for years before that, so I've been on the internet for 22 years, which is longer than most of you have been. You know, with a computer, let alone the internet. And for the first time in 22 years, I was called a troll. I couldn't believe it. I was, damn, yes, it's about time.
I guess. Right. That's good.
Oh.
I love it.
I was called a lib. I mean, look, come on.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
By a conservative, no less.
Didn't know you.
I did get out to play some golf on Sunday.
Oh, that was so cool. Yay.
I did get out to play some golf on Sunday. But I haven't been wearing golf shoes in a while. I usually have a nice pair of tennies or something that I wear. But this season, I haven't been playing enough, and I like flip-flops. Not flip-flops, but sandals.
Yeah.
And so I actually been playing golf in sandals, which of course people look at me like I'm really crazy until they hit the ball and then they go, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Obviously, sandals aren't going to make any difference here. Anyways, I was playing with a guy on Sunday and, you know, nice guy. He was actually an attorney, believe it or not, for a firm that I know, but we don't run the same type of law, you know, Victoria and he do not run the same type of law.
Okay.
So we don't cross paths too often. But he's a big old guy and he just stepped up to the and just, I don't know, go ahead and let it rip, and he just ripped it, and he did a pretty good nice drive down the right side of the fairway, and I got up with my sandal and went, oh, that's pretty good, you know, and I whacked it about 30 yards past him. That wasn't a big deal. I broke my sandal.
Oh, no.
And I had to play all nine holes. With
in barefoot?
No. I kept it on, but it was not fun.
Yeah,
I enjoyed the round. I did enjoy the round, but that was beside the kind of point. Anyway, I wanted to, before I let you do your rant, I want two things that we won't get into a whole lot of discussion about. Have you heard about the soldier salute?
Is that the thank a soldier thing?
The thank a soldier thing.
I have heard about it, but I don't know what it is.
Hand over heart, lay the hand, palm out.
Cool.
So it's right hand over the heart, then palm out, and thank you. It's a nice little gesture. I generally, whenever I see somebody in the military, I go up and say thank you very much and shake their hands.
Mm-hmm.
As a general rule. And I'll do it all the time, but most of the time when I see someone in uniform, I do. It kind of depends on the circumstance and situation. If it's possible to interrupt, it's okay. And for those of you that don't read Michael Yon, you really need to be. Reports from the front. His reports are usually amazing reporting about what's going on with our troops and on the front line. He has a really, really good one up right now. I highly recommend it. If you need to know how to get a hold of his website or something like that, let me know.
Yep.
Good story. All right. Dear Bill, you have the floor.
Is that right?
Yes, then, you have the floor. I give you the mic here.
Then thank you very much. So let's take a step back in time. Let's go back in history to July of 1776. And a guy by the name of Thomas Jefferson almost single-handedly wrote the Declaration of Independence. Not quite, but almost. It's majorly attributable to him. And almost everybody remembers the very start of that, which is that when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands. Almost everybody knows that. What most folks don't think about is the whole rest of that. And so given the talk amongst elected officials, let alone the populace, tossing around the term revolt, let's talk about that just a little bit. Part of what he wrote in about the third paragraph is prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer, while evils are sufferable, than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. Those are pretty powerful words. And they caused a stir in the population at that time. And I will submit to you that although when we talk about revolution today, we talk about ballot box revolutions, and while we talk about those usurpations of power, and while we talk about those minor inconveniences that government foists upon us, that talk is still real. There was a saying after the Civil War, those who had participated in the Civil War, and that phrase was, they've seen the elephant. And that referred to those who had participated under arms in the Civil War had seen war. They knew the terrible cost of that. They knew that what they were fighting for was right. And their term for that was, they've seen the elephant. When we talk about today, those usurpations of power, when we talk about today, those train of abuses pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, that strikes a chord in us, regardless of where we were educated, at least for a certain portion of the population. And I will tell you that we are to that point. Nobody that has seen war will ever tell you, oh yeah, that's a good thing. Nobody. I have been associated with military people from the time that I was 17 years old, and I'm 66 years old now. And I can tell you that I have never, ever met a military person that will tell you, oh yeah, that's a good thing. Ever. None of them. So when a government takes upon itself the rule that they can tell you what it is that you will do, how you will receive your health care, what you will eat, what you will or will not smoke, what you will or will not drink, that every time you go to a restaurant, you will be confronted with what are the calories and the grams of fat and the grams of sugar and whatever the measure is for salt in your food. People will endure that for a while. But at some point in time, the line is crossed. And we are very dangerously close to that line being crossed. And a government, any government, whether that is President Bush's, the current occupant of the White House, whether it is the Chinese government, if you push that line, and you push that line hard enough, the people will, in fact, rise up and oppose you. And I think that that is where we are today. I think that the line has been crossed, and it is a line that is between statism and liberty. That fight has been fought since 1776. It was not fought so much before then, because before then, what everybody knew was there was royalty and there were serfs, and everybody knew their place. And then along came those upstart, uppity Americans who said, no, that isn't correct. There is, in fact, a different way. That the people themselves can be trusted to govern themselves. And they will do so better than any monarch, any dictator, any other form of government. And from 1776 on, that has largely proven to be true. Has that been challenged? Of course it has. We have fought that many times. We fought it in 1776. We fought it in the 30s and the 40s. We fought it, although not with force of arms directly, in the 80s. We have fought that against communism since the 50s. We have been victorious mostly in saying no, liberty and freedom trumps statism. And we are at a deciding point in our times, not our ancestors' times, not our children's and grandchildren's times, but our times right now. We are at that decision point. Are we, in fact, for liberty and freedom, or do we opt for statism? Do we opt for the state saying, we are the arbiters of what will happen? Or are we for that messy, tumultuous republic that says people are entitled to rule themselves? Yes, that will be messy. Yes, it will be inconvenient. but they are entitled to rule themselves. And we are engaged in that struggle right now. So I would tell you, right now, that if you are not involved in that struggle, that you have opted for statism. You have opted for people telling you how you will live your life, rather than you telling other people how you will live your life. The choice is yours. You can say, I'm tired of the fight. I'm tired. I'm worn out. I don't want any more to do with it. Just let me be. Unfortunately, no one's going to let you be. Or you can say, I am entitled to rule myself. I am entitled to that representation which accurately reflects my values, my philosophy, and you can enter the fray. But if you don't, you have said, I'm willing to let somebody else rule me. I have a great deal of confidence that people will opt to rule themselves and not let somebody else rule them. I'm done, Tracy.
Oh, I don't think so. I think you have just begun to fight.
Well, I'm pretty involved, that's for sure.
You know, I wrote an essay a while back that kind of hits upon the general idea, where Jefferson said these truths are self-evident, and in fact, at the time, boy, they were not.
No, that's right.
Most of those truths were anything but self-evident.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things I wanted to say, you know, you're right. People are like the frog in a pot of water.
Yes.
You put a frog in cold water and then set it to boil, the frog will stay there until he boils to death.
Yep.
You know, we have dealt with the fact that every interference of government basically is taxes.
Yes.
We're going to get taxed for this. We're going to get fees for this. We're going to get taxed for this. We're going to, you know, we'll suffer taxes for a long time because it's just money.
Yes.
But what's going on right now is not just taxes. It's, you know, Obama is spending us into oblivion, but, you know, he wants control over the life.
And that's the difference.
Right.
That is the difference.
That's the tipping point.
And that's the line.
For most people, that's the tipping point.
Yes.
We have a visitor that would like to share a few words. Sean from Texas joins us again tonight. Good evening, Sean.
The great Republic of Texas. Sean, good evening.
Good evening. Hey, guys.
What's up, dude?
I want to tell your listeners that have never been to a socialist country or never lived in it a little bit of what it's like from an American perspective.
Okay.
I was a bleeding liberal. When I was younger, my wife and I got married when I made like $10 an hour. I worked in a machine shop. I thought the world owed me something. We had $300 a month of food stamps. We lived in a $20,000 house that was right next to the projects. And she's a Dane, and her parents kept telling us how great Denmark was. So we scraped together some money, moved to Denmark. When we got to Denmark, all of a sudden, within about 6 months, I'm a conservative. I want to go back to America, and so does my wife. And to give you an idea of what we found there, now there's a lot of reports that Denmark is the most happiest country on earth, right? You hear about this all the time. And you also hear that they have great medical and all this. Well, here's the reality of it. They don't know any better, number one, because they've never lived here. They don't know what it's like to have the freedom they have. So they can't compare it to anything. They have 60% taxes on average. Municipal tax, 24%. 8% goes to medical, so their medical isn't free, even though they say it is.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to this, I forgot what the website was. But anyway, you look around, you can find their breakdown of that 60%. But 60% of your income is immediately taxed. Buy a burger costs you about $10 for one of our 99-cent burgers.
Oh, boy.
When we were there with both of us working minimum wage, we were living in worse conditions and have less freedom, less money. And I know money isn't everything, but we were literally in poverty there. Where in America, with $10 an hour, one of us working, we actually were better off. Now, 5 years after getting back, I'm in a six-figure range, and I did it on my own. I educated myself. I got into a career path that had some growth, and I made the decision to take care of myself. But living there, and here's a quick little example of what Danish life is like. We go to her sister's house. She takes a pot of soup and feeds us with bread and soup, and the soup is watery with a couple of meatballs and a can of mixed vegetables. That was it. Real bland. The next day we go over there, she takes the same pot off of the counter and puts it back on the stove and turns the fire back on. It had been sitting there all night.
Oh boy.
They're extremely frugal. That's real poverty. I mean, and they charged us for Christmas dinner. We go over there for Christmas dinner. They invite us. We take three trains, walk through the snow, you know, a couple of buses, get over there, and we're greeted at the door. Hey, it's 40 krona for the adults and half price for the kids. And then
your relative?
Wait. At your sister-in-law's house?
Yes. At her parents' house.
Parents.
And so I'm like, okay, whatever, or, you know, I fork over some more money, you know, and they're just extremely frugal over there. And one of her sisters lived in an apartment. Now, I'm sure there's some apartments in New York City like this, but that didn't even have a shower. Not to mention, I don't know how to flush the toilet, you know. They had a string. I thought it was the light switch. I had to stick my head out of the closet where they put the toilet and into the living room, which is the only other room in the apartment, and say, I need some help here. and then there's other toilets where you have to, like, pull a knob, and I'm twisting it, and I don't know how to do it. But toilets aside, they're extremely poor, but they don't know it. They really don't know it. They think that, okay, you know, I get all my medicals taken care of, which I'll get into that in a second. It's not what you want. I mean, it's not what we appreciate here in America. My son fell down the stairs. We rush him to the hospital. Well, first we call the ambulance. 3 to 4 hours to get an ambulance to the apartment. So we decide, hell, we'll just take a subway and a train and a bus, and we'll get there somehow. We get to the ER. We open the door there. There's a broken wooden wheelchair in one corner. There's a 220-volt, everything's 220 over there, volt lamp with a frayed wire that's been twisted and the little electrical tape slid down it, and there's a little kid playing 3 feet from it on the floor. There's blood on the floor, no computers. It looked like I walked into 1950.
When was this, Sean? When were you there?
This was in Albert Slund in 1996.
Okay.
So there probably weren't a lot of computers going on then anyway, but still, it was going back in time. So the doctor came finally after 4 or 5 hours, put his hand on my son's head and said, that's a problem with you Americans. You always worry about things. It's just a bump on the head. Go away. Another time, my son had a 104-degree temperature. We call the doctor. About 2 hours later, he comes to the house, or to our apartment, and he doesn't have his own thermometer. So I said, here, borrow mine. He doesn't know how to convert Celsius to Fahrenheit. He puts his hand on my son's forehead and says, that's a problem with you Americans. You want to give your kids medicine for no apparent reason. You know, just put them in a bathtub of ice.
Oh, boy. Okay.
And so there's your free medical. You know, they can have it. And I have many more stories. I don't want to take up all your time. But I'm just telling you, not to have to walk through the snow carrying your bag of bottles because you're paying 2 times the amount of the price for the bottle for the refund, so you'll be insured to bring it back, hoping they don't break because then you can't bring them back.
Mm-hmm.
You have to lug all this stuff to the grocery store and then lug it all back because you can't have a car. Nobody can afford a car. You know, only 33% of Danes have a car, or families
really?
Have a car. Yeah.
Huh.
And 26% of Danes, by the way, live off of the government welfare. When, I can't remember which president quote, I'm going to quote here, but one of them stated, I think it was Reagan, if poverty is easy, then you're never going to get out of it.
That's true.
I can't remember which, and it was probably not the exact words, but Another example, you had to stand in line every Saturday to sort your trash for about 2 or 3 hours out in the snow. You had this little cart, and you drove it down to the station. They would open up these gates, and you would go. You had about 9 dumpsters to throw away your trash. And then you'd have some guy sitting there going, "That's a problem with you Americans. What's wrong with a Ziploc bag? It's got spaghetti sauce. It's got spaghetti sauce in it. It's trash." "No, it's not trash. It's perfectly good. You should rinse it out and reuse it." That's where we're heading.
Boy.
That's where we're heading, and you're not going to like it when we get it.
Yep. Yep.
Well, one of the stories that I had, and this is actually quite a long time ago, my uncle worked for a company in England. He was vice president of sales, the equivalent of vice president of sales. He was, he reported to the head of the company, and he was coming to the United States to negotiate with Disney marketing rights in England for their company to sell Disney-branded products.
Okay.
That gives you an idea of the level at which he was in his corporate structure.
Right.
He came to this country and he visited my parents because, of course, you know, that's in-laws. You know, mom was his sister-in-law. And he had been working with this company for a long number of years, and they had a beautiful home in the suburb of London. And he came to our house and he went, "Do you have, who lives in the other floors?" And my parents went, "What? Well, this is a 3-flat, right?" My parents went, "No." He goes, you can't own this whole thing." "Yes." He was just amazed. Their spectacular home in the suburbs in London was 1,300 square feet.
Wow.
They didn't own the land.
My house is 3,000 square feet, and her family members try to borrow money because they think I'm a millionaire. And I paid $142,000 for my house. I'm not a millionaire.
Yeah, my parents' house was about 3,700 square foot. It was a frame in Chicago, an average house in Chicago with a basement, a main level, and an upstairs. Anyways, yeah, that's a big thing. All right. Yes.
Oh, one more thing about my wife's sister. She was 37 when she died 2 years ago of leukemia. My wife was probably a good donor for bone marrow, but they wouldn't pay for it because they didn't think it was cost effective at her stage.
Wow.
And that's all I
have. Okay. Sean,
thank
you so much.
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right.
We'll talk
to
you soon. All right. Now, my second thing is, one of the things I do, what you said at the beginning, Sean is right. People just don't understand. In comparisons, people want to compare what we have in the United States to England or Canada. You're comparing apples to oranges. Yeah, we're still talking about fruit, but let me tell you, we're talking about whole different animals.
Oh, yeah.
It's just different. People come to our grocery stores and they stare at the fact that there's a whole aisle of cereal. What kind of cereal do you want? What do you mean, what kind of cereal? What kind of cereal do you want? Do you want oat? Do you want wheat? Do you want rye? Pick it. It's there. I've had so many people on the left say, "We have too many choices in our life." I just don't understand that. Too many choices?
Right.
We don't need 100 box different types of cereal. We can get by with 20. What? What do you mean we can get by with 20 boxes of cereal? Why don't we have 200 boxes of cereal? If a company wants to produce 200 different kinds of cereal and they can sell it and make a profit doing it, why? What's wrong with having too many choices? It's like that line in, do you ever see the movie Amadeus?
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
He plays this wonderful piece for the king, and the king goes, "It has too many notes." And he went, "Too many what?" "It's too many notes. I couldn't, it was too much. There was too many notes. It was, And he went, how come there be too many notes? You can't have too many or too little. I had the right amount of notes. That was the number of notes it takes to do that. You know, we have choices. This is a country of liberties and freedoms.
Exactly.
You know, you don't sit there and say, you have too many choices. You have too many freedoms. You have too many liberties. These truths are not self-evident to a whole lot of people.
More's the pity.
More's the pity.
Yeah.
Now, I want to kind of get into some of this stuff. I'm going to just kind of throw some of this stuff out here.
Excellent.
Okay? First question I have for you, Bill.
Yes.
Do we want a GOP Congress in 2010?
Not necessarily.
I don't think it'd be a good idea. Personally, myself, I don't think it'd be a good idea. I think we should allow Obama to sit and swing, you know, and let him have Congress. You know, he can have Congress. I said it to a couple people over the last week, you know. You don't need to have town halls. You don't need to listen to us. Go back to Washington, D.C., have your vote, get health care reform, let Obama sign it. Go right ahead. No requirement that we have to pay, that you have to pay one bit of attention to it. I think we should let them do it.
Well, I will tell you, I am of two minds about that. I truly am.
Well, yeah, I understand that. You know, I understand that. And a year ago today, I was making the argument that the American people should get exactly what they wanted.
Yeah.
And people were saying, do you realize what you're saying? I went, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't generally not know what I'm saying, yes.
Yeah, knew what I was saying. Knew the harbinger of death that I was calling down upon the United States. But you know what? I have a great deal of confidence in the American people, a great deal of confidence in the American people that when you absolutely put them against the wall, you have just cornered a cat with her kittens in her tail. Bad, bad idea.
You know, I agree with that analysis. But let me tell you the fear that I have that that leads to. And the fear that I have that that leads to is an open, armed rebellion.
You know, I don't think... I don't think the left has the stomach for it.
Oh, I know they don't have the stomach for it. But, you know, in the 30s, we got Social Security. Prior to that, we got income taxes.
I mean, here, you know what? Here's why I don't agree, why I don't, I'm not willing to accept the concept that we can relate to back that time frame.
Okay.
And here's why. Okay? Unless you went to the movie reels, and unless you read a paper and you were lucky enough to be able to get some information from one of the, you know, big newspapers,
mm-hmm.
for the most part, the country didn't know what was going on.
That's true.
And most of that stuff was done fait accompli. You know, it was simply handed to the American people.
Yep.
If they knew what was going on, they probably didn't understand most of what was going on. I you know, I read the one of the opinions back from the 30s on the Social Security. And let me tell you, after 10 years of working for an attorney,
mm-hmm.
those people back there couldn't write worth their beans. Man,
mm-hmm.
was that difficult to go through. Okay, so, you know, we are in an incredibly different world at this point. Barack
yep.
Obama can't sneeze unless somebody in, you know, Norridge, California hears about it on Twitter 30 seconds later.
Yep.
You know, we're gonna hear all kinds of stuff about what he's doing in, you know, Martha's Vineyard this week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's simply not going to be able to avoid, you know, as long as he stays on his little compound, there won't be a whole lot of knowing what's going on. But if he steps out of that compound, you know, there's going to be a lot of people paying attention.
Oh, absolutely.
We're not going to hear too much of the bad stuff because the media's in the tank for him, but we're going to hear enough of this stuff. But that's the point, is that we are simply better informed. We simply have more information. We have more at our fingertips. Congress cannot pass something, you know, on Tuesday, and most of the American people hear about it on Thursday.
That's true.
Okay, so that changes things. Changes things dramatically, and it also means that, you know, a congressman, you know, can't, you know, seeing his constituents on Saturday, can shrug his shoulder and say, "Well, I really didn't have much of a choice. You know, I had to do what was better for everybody, and, you know, that was the decision we made." And every time he's going to go, "Well, okay, you know, we sent you there." No. You know, now we know all about beforehand, and we know what he's doing, and we know who he's shaking hands with. Sorry, you know. No, all the things suggest at this particular point in time that what was wrong, how that stuff got passed 70 years from ago,
yep.
60 years from now, can't happen at this point. However, I will concede that once Congress passes this health care reform,
mm-hmm.
and I do believe it'll pass, I do believe it will never be implemented.
Really?
I believe it will never be implemented. Because I can tell you what's going to happen in front of 435 Congress people. There is going to be signs in front of every one of those offices saying, "You better have a job lined up for January 2011. Because where you're working now, you ain't going to be working there then."
And so your analysis supposes that if it passes, control of at least the House would pass to the nominal party in opposition, and they would refuse to implement a passed and signed into law bill?
Yep. Yep.
I mean, I can understand how that can happen because Congress, the House of Representatives has control of the purse strings, so you could say, okay, we simply will not authorize any money to implement this. The problem that you have is you still got to get that through the Senate. And it still takes 60 votes to get that through the Senate. That's 60 votes that conservatives do not currently have.
That's
now, you could institute a constitutional crisis. We are there. But, I mean, you could overtly, not covertly, but overtly institute a constitutional crisis and have the House stand firm on a budget that includes no money for implementation of any health care legislation, and the Senate unable to also kill it, so it still remains law. And so you simply shut down government by not passing a budget.
Right. It's a good option.
I played with that idea in my head today, saying, okay, so what would happen? And I have to tell you, I came to no conclusions. I'm not a soothsayer nor a fortune teller. My crystal ball is really cloudy. Don't know what would happen. I know the last time that was tried, the Republicans got hammered big time.
We've got a lot to go.
Yeah, we will.
All right, here's my question.
Okay.
Does Obama and Eric Holder going after the CIA, is that a bad thing?
Oh,
long
big
term.
Time.
You think so?
Big time.
You know what? The CIA has played politics, and it really never should have done so because, you know, that's not where it belongs. It played politics over the last 8 years, and frankly, you know, what it hasn't been doing is its job.
That's true.
And while I certainly think that it creates somewhat of a risk for us at this particular point in time, you know, I'd really like to see the CIA slap back onto their silly little perch and said, you know, stay out of politics. It's not your bailiwick. Get back on the stick and do your job.
I don't disagree with that. Hard to see how our national security is enhanced by the way that is being accomplished.
You know what? As long as CIA is going to play politics, I don't think that our national security is being enhanced anyways.
Well, I'm going to get a lot of argument about that from me.
All right, moving on. We'll talk about it. We'll think about it. All right, we've been hearing a lot about astroturfing.
Yes, we have.
Let's apply that word to a new concept.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Bernanke said the economy's getting better. Well, when he sees the stars green shoots, that's astroturf.
I'm sorry. I just...
It's not real.
That cracks me up. Oh, Lord. Excuse me, folks. I mean, you know, anybody who's paying attention knows that is laughing right along with me.
Have you ever seen people out in Las Vegas? They spray paint their dirt green.
Yeah.
Or they have astroturf. It's not real. You know, Bernanke, it's not real.
No, it isn't.
These green shoots you see is astroturf. It's not real. All right. A few items that suggest that it's astroturf.
Yeah.
Okay. The last housing numbers showing that the housing market has rebounded.
Oh, boy.
If you eliminate the 45,000 condos that sold unaccountably in the Northeast that were way above expectations, if you eliminate those 45,000 condos, housing was flat.
Mm.
With an $8,000 tax credit, low interest rates, and prices in some places as much as 50% off, and foreclosure pricing all over the place, housing was flat.
Hmm.
At what is normally the peak time in the selling year for housing.
Yep.
Not good.
Hmm.
We heard over the last 2 days, I think it was this morning or yesterday, that the cure rate for mortgages. Now, when a mortgage holder it becomes late, 30 days or more, you know, it's kind of hard to get caught up with two mortgage payments or three mortgage payments. But historically, 40 to 60% of people that get behind get caught up.
Yep.
The rest eventually,
happens. No, wait. Tracy, you have to qualify that. That's of the prime mortgages.
I would suggest to you that the 60% is up at the prime and the 40% was at the lower, Alt-A. I'm not talking about subprime, which is an entirely different animal,
exactly,
historically speaking.
Yes.
Okay. Currently, the cure rate, normally in the 40 to 60% range, is in the 3 to 6% range.
Yep.
3 to 6. That means right now, 95% probability that if you get behind 1 month, you're going to lose the house.
Yep.
1 month. That's insane. That is absolutely insane. That means that somewhere in the vicinity of 8 to 10 months from now, there's going to be a whole lot more foreclosures.
Oh, absolutely.
Green shoots. Green shoots.
Oh, yeah, green shoots. You betcha. Let's spray that green paint on that desert sand.
China has evaluated its growth projections over the next year.
Yeah.
2%.
How much?
Two. 2%. Now, people, you know, in order for our economy to be considered growing, we need 150,000 new jobs per month to absorb new workers and such.
Yep.
So if you only have 75,000 new jobs, you're actually 75,000 still in the hole.
Yep.
Okay. In China, the number is 2 million.
Ow.
2 million a month. They need 2 million normal. They need 7% growth just to keep even. 2% is like us being down 6.
Yeah.
Bad news. Bad news. No there. I am really, really beginning to worry that if you're in the stock market come October 1st, you're in deep doo-doo, because I got a sneaking suspicion that this Black October is going to make previous Black Octobers look patty cake in comparison.
Yep.
I think it's going to be really, really bad. We are $9 trillion in the hole for the next 10 years.
Yep.
That is more deficit in 8 months than Bush did in 8 years.
Yes.
Combined.
Yep.
Now, I was told back in October, November, that Obama was 10 times the president that Bush was. I didn't realize, you know, I thought that they were saying, you know, 10 times better.
Yeah, silly you.
But I do want to say this to the left. You know, there is reason to be cheerful. Obama's president, and Congress is in control of the Democrats. What could go wrong?
Exactly.
Come on. You know, they should be fine. Somebody said something today that I said I'm going to use, because I had never heard this said before. Why are the Democrats in such a snit and thither?
Yes, yes, I saw that. That is so good. Scooter P, yes, thank you.
Obama's on vacation, and about it looks like about 350,000 other Americans are going to join him out of the office this month. He'll get to go back to his work. They're done.
Yep.
And I have a question. When is the left going to start speaking truth to power?
Oh, don't hold your breath.
Just asking, you know. Bernanke has been given the thumbs up for another 4 years.
Yes, he has. No, wait a minute. Bernanke is the Secretary, right?
Head of the Fed.
Yep, okay.
Head of the Fed.
Okay. Those are 12-year appointments, aren't they?
No. They're four, but they're off years.
Okay.
Okay. Next year, they are either going to crown him Prince Bernanke, because the economy is just going to be going bangers.
Yeah, right.
Or they're going to run him out of town on a rail.
Yeah.
One or the other. I don't know if there's going to be a whole lot of in-between. You know? And so I said to somebody today, I said, with Bernanke in there, I said, there's only two ways this recession is going to end. Badly or slowly.
Yeah.
Somebody said, I beg to differ with you, it's going to end badly, slowly.
Yes. The only question is, how badly?
You know, somebody suggested that we're going to see positive GDP growth in the third quarter.
Of what year?
Well, this year.
This year?
What was that? Somebody had quoted Bernanke, and it sounded like something he said to Congress last week, you know, things are going to improve, housing is coming back, we're going to see improvement, stuff like that. And it turned out to be a quote from 2007.
Yeah. Oops. Bernie. Oh, Lord.
What do you like to do here? Okay. All right. Now I want to spend, we've kind of hinted at it. Sean got into it, and I was kind of like, oh, okay, that's fine, we can talk about that, but I want to talk a little bit more because it's such a big deal. It's such a big deal. You know, healthcare.
Healthcare.
Healthcare. It's a big deal. You know, it's not a right. Not, sorry.
Nope.
I hate to tell you that, not a right. And
yep.
How can I tell you that it's not a right? Somebody said, how do you know it's not a right? Okay, here's the deal. Okay, take a person, dump them on a desert island in the middle of the ocean. Okay? It's a fairly nice-sized island. Yeah. Okay. What does he have the right to do? He has the right to go find himself some food.
Yep.
He has the right to create himself some shelter.
Yep.
And if he wants to, he can build a bonfire on the beach and go, I have created fire! I have created fire! He can jump around and be all cheery.
Yep.
What he can't do is demand health care.
Nope.
From who?
Exactly.
How? Just yeah. Stand there on the beach and go, okay, I want health care. Give it to me. No, all right. Sorry. Can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody said to me today, you know why we're having such a big problem with medical bills? And I'm like, yeah, but obviously you have a thought in mind, so share it with me. And they said, well, Medicare. I'm like, yeah, obviously you have a thought in mind. Go ahead and share it with me. He goes, well, cost shifting. I went, yep, that's correct. Anybody that studied, you know, the healthcare industry over the last 30 to 40 years absolutely understands that the reason the majority of us are paying a lot more for healthcare is, in fact, almost universally Medicare.
Yep.
Because Medicare says, you know, that procedure costs $2,000, and we're going to pay you $1,600.
Yep.
We don't care where you get the other $400 from, but, you know, we're only going to pay you $1,600. And so the doctor goes to the person that doesn't have Medicare and says, you know, I know this procedure only costs $2,400, but we did it yesterday with that person, and they only paid $1,600, so you're going to pay $2,400.
Yes,
so
indeed.
What?
Yes, indeed.
And that's what happened, and it happened a whole lot of times. And then government saying, you know, pretty soon, you know, everyone else is paying $2,400. Government goes, okay, well, we'll pay 80% of $2,400, and now they're going to be paying, ooh, $2,200. And Medicare goes, well, we can't be doing that, so instead of paying you 80%, we're going to pay you 60%.
Yep.
And the doctor goes, well, they only paid $1,200, and so we're going to have to charge you $3,300.
Yes,
and they're going, well, wait a second. Your paycheck hasn't gone up that much, and the nurse's paycheck hasn't gone up that much, and utilities haven't cost that much. And how come, you know, Medicare's medical costs have gone up like 15% and, you know, nothing, inflation hasn't? And he goes, well, you know, Medicare dropped their reimbursement again.
Again?
And so, you know, we have to pay more. And, of course, you know, that's not going to stop under health care.
No, it isn't, and it's going to get worse.
Because,
you know, and here is one of the unintended consequences of that, folks. Here in Trinity County, total population under 15,000 people, larger than at least three of the northeastern states combined. We have a hospital in our county seat. That would be Weaverville, Trinity County, California. We just had, a couple of years ago, an election, and we elected to tax ourselves $100 a parcel to keep our medical facility. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot. Folks, let me tell you something. In Trinity County, from where I sit in Hay Fork, California, it can take me an entire day to get to the most remote part of my county. An entire day. I will have to spend the night and come back the next day. Okay? So, we taxed ourselves $100 a parcel to keep a medical facility open, a hospital open, in Weaverville, California. Weaverville, California is about 40 minutes from my residence. I made that commute for 19 years. I know exactly how long it takes. My next option, if I don't have medical care, a hospital here in Trinity County, is to take an hour and 20 minutes to get to the next closest hospital, which is in Redding, California. The point of all of that is this. When you cost shift and you provide less than the cost of service, when that happens, you automatically say, oh, by the way, those of you in rural America, and I don't care whether you're in Trinity County or any other rural county in the United States of America, we are going to deny you competent, timely medical care. It ain't going to happen.
It is ludicrous to believe, under any set of circumstances, that you can increase the number of people covered by a medical program by millions and hope, under any set of circumstances, to believe in any shape, form, or otherwise, that the cost is going to be less.
Exactly.
Now, you can certainly make the argument that it's going to be less per person, and I might consider that that's a possibility if, in fact, you have a really good idea of exactly what cost you are incurring. But of course, the people that are most likely to get put onto this program are the worst sick people. And I don't mean that's bad, that they're bad people in any sense of this. But you're going to have people like Victoria who are using medical, expenses in a dramatic fashion.
Yes.
CJ, Victoria, and I constitute a household of three. And Victoria is accumulating, using medical resources at a rate neither CJ nor I have done in our entire combined lives.
Yep.
And she's the kind of person that, is going to end up on these type of medical programs.
That's right.
There's no way those costs per person are going to go down unless there's going to be significant rationing.
Exactly.
Has to be. And somebody said, well, there's lots of rationing going on now. Yeah, but you know what? It's not government institutionalized.
There's other
choices. There's other ways of approaching it. But if you take the government and you institutionalize government rationing and apply that across the marketplace, everyone has to do it. There is no out. There is no alternative. There's no way to get away from it.
Nope.
There's no choice. And I got to ask. I got to wonder. I got to think that the people that scream at the top of their lungs, pro-choice, that they should be thinking about the idea that people should be able to choose what doctors they go to, what hospitals they go to, and what coverage they want to have.
Yep.
But apparently,
exactly, not.
That's
what it appears like so far. At least that's where the dividing line appears to be.
If you want to cover the people that can't afford medical coverage right now, open Medicare to anybody that needs it. If you have people that cannot get medical coverage because of pre-existing conditions, open Medicare so that people can do it and then double Medicare's budget. That would still be cheaper.
It would be cheaper, but we still would not be able to pay for it. I am on Medicare. I will tell you frankly, I am on Medicare because the government has limited my choice and I cannot get private insurance. Insurance companies will not sell to me because I am over 65. Therefore, I am eligible for Medicare. Therefore, I cannot buy private insurance. Folks, that's wrong. Just plain wrong.
Right. They've shut private insurance out of the over 65 area.
Yep.
Say your goodnights.
Hey, all of my buds out there, thank you very much for listening. All of my CT buds. Arkansas Traveler, thanks for listening.
Bill, have a good week.
Tracy, you too.
People, stay vigilant. rough.
Cool. We had a good caller tonight.
Yeah, but I was worried about it.
Yeah, I know. But you always worry about it.
Not about what he was saying or anything like that, except for that we got to the point where, by the time we got to my little list of things, we only had 25 minutes left.
Yeah, I know. Yep. That's radio. With live callers.
Pammy said that there was a lot of static in the background.
Yeah.
For a period of time.
I saw that.
Yeah.
And I hear it. I mean, but I can't tell you where it's coming from.
Okay. I didn't hear it.
Ah, okay.
So, it's on your side.
Must be.
I
can hear it in my phone.
Our phones have been really staticky for the last couple of weeks. I wonder about that.
So,
other than that, fine. I mean, I got everything that I wanted to basically say in. You got your rant in.
Yep.
We didn't spend a whole lot of time talking about the stuff. But that's okay.
You know what? We always got next week. And we are not ever going to run out of material. Although I will tell you, I truly am worried about the idea that you have of let them pass it. I really am. I think that's a line that if they cross, that could get real bloody real quick.
Here's the deal. First of all, we can't stop it.
No, that's true.
Okay. And two, if in fact we can't stop it, then what we need to do is make sure they own it.
That's also true.
I'm
not disagreeing with you, Tracy. I'm just saying, man, I'm not a prophet or anything like that, but man, I can sure see a real bloody kind of thing happening from that.
Yeah. No, I really don't think so. When it comes down to it, it happened over the weekend. On Sunday afternoon, I was having a little conversation with somebody, and they turned on me and said, "So that's what you want to do? Is you want these people to suffer?" And I turned and stepped in and said, it's not my problem. People make choices. These are some of the choices they've made. I am not going to be held accountable for their actions.
Mm-hmm.
You are not going to take from my pocket money to make sure that they're happy because they think they need it.
Yep.
And he stepped back. He stepped back twice.
Good.
It's this general idea, this idea that, well, you're going to be a greedy, cold-hearted bastard. Yeah, bullshit.
If that's the appellation, then fine, I'll wear it. Okay, fine.
He figured by calling me out on it that I backed down.
Yeah.
Ooh, that was not the response he was going to get.
No.
I'm tired of it. I'm not going to do it. I'm simply not going to do it.
And that is what I was trying to get at with my rant. That while those injustices are tolerated, while they are tolerable, people will go along with it. But there is a line that you cross. And when you cross it, then there is hell to pay. And folks are there. I mean, they are just, they're there.
Yeah, but you know what? I don't disagree with you at all. I believe that there is enough people at this point. All that evil needs to succeed is that good men do nothing.
Yep. Edmund Burke.
Okay. Evil is not going to succeed at this point because good men, good women, are starting to do something.
Exactly. Woke the
and
sleeping giant.
And all they're doing is shining a light upon the cockroaches.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and they're scurrying. You know, they're sitting there screaming, "Oh, you're hurting me, you're hurting me."
Yeah, yeah, racist and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Tough
yep.
shit.
Mm.
You know,
actually, that is a good thing that has come out of this. That epithet, racist, has lost its sting.
Yeah, people are not, first of all, people are no longer like, "Oh, please don't call me that." Oh, bullshit.
Exactly.
Right, it's
exactly.
been used so often so much that, you know, people just go, you know, bullshit.
Yeah.
You're just throwing that out there hoping that it'll mean something, that it'll do something. Ah, bullshit.
Yeah, that's
take
exactly
it,
right. Exactly. So if nothing else happens, that particular brand has lost its cachet. It's done. I don't know of anybody, of people that I know, people that I've talked to, people that I have seen their tweets on or anything else, that is willing to stand, that willing to take that anymore. They're saying, "Hey, that's not racist. That's just telling you like it is."
Let's see if I can do this. A deck of cards has 52 cards.
Yep. 54 if you count the two jokers.
The left has played them like each was a, quote, race card.
Uh-huh.
The deck is almost empty. And the race card is worth, I can't get it in there, worth less.
Yep.
Let's see.
Too many characters?
Yeah.
Dang.
52 cards in a deck. 52 cards in a deck. The left has played them like each was a race card. The deck is almost empty, and the race card is now worthless.
Yep.
That's what I do. Used so often. Used so wrongly. Call me racist. And it no longer has any meaning. No sting. No value. Only good thing. That would be Obama presidency. Oh, I'll leave that part out.
Oh, that's cool because Arkansas Traveler was just talking about a card game called Smartass at Barnes & Noble. His wife found it.
See how that sits up there.
Yep.
You know, I'm sitting there and I realized that I had over 5,000 tweets. I'm going like, I might be catching up with Bill. How many tweets Bill has? Yeah,
how many do I have?
9,000.
Oh, Jesus. Really? God.
Yeah.
Shit. Oh, well. You know, what can I say?
Yeah, you retired people got all this time in the
world. I know, geez. I mean, you know, I'm not slaving over a hot computer doing BKs. Oh, God. Well.
All right.
It's going to be interesting.
Is there anything else that we really need to do? do what you can. Get out of the market by October 1st.
I'm out. I haven't gotten back in, and I'm not getting back in. I'm done for 2009, and we'll see what happens in 2010. I ain't risking capital in this market.
Yeah, I've got a sneaking suspicion. Everything says that, I'm not a believer. I don't believe in the idea that you can talk an economy down.
Oh, I think you can. I mean, there's a market psychology.
There is a market psychology.
And we have talked about that before.
Yeah, I agree. There is a market psychology, but I don't believe you can talk a market down. I believe you can talk the stock market, into some tithers.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think you can talk the economy into a recession.
Oh, no. No, you can, when I talk about a market psychology, I'm talking about the stock market only.
But other people are using the idea that we talked ourselves into a recession.
Bullshit.
Yeah, and that's bullshit. But what? You can't talk yourself out of one either.
That's true.
And while the argument being made is that if you can give the market some confidence, people will start spending again, that might be true if, in fact, there was something to spend it on.
Yep.
Nobody's going into the housing market right now. There's no bottom yet. There's no way to value property, unless you're willing to take a flyer on it.
Yeah.
The only reason foreclosures are being sold right now is because no one believes that they can go that much lower. They're selling for 60, 70% under what they were selling for 2 years ago. Everybody thinks they can't go much lower.
Ouch.
And there's a certain sense that's rational. You got a house that sold, three times in the last 5 years or the last 6 years. All three of those sales were more than $400,000, and that house is on the market right now for $230,000. You're sitting there going, "Duh, I'm an idiot not to do it." And of course, the bank is going, it can't go much lower than $230,000. Even if it does, we're only talking about maybe another $10,000 or $15,000, and then it's going to start coming back up. And look at the upside potential.
Yeah.
That's what they're looking at. They're going, "Well, it can't go much lower." And I'm sitting there like going, "There's no bottom."
No. There isn't.
When you have a bottom, there's no way to say that this is going to stop at 10, $15,000 or $20,000 or even $50,000.
Do you ever watch Beck or listen to him?
No.
No?
Two reasons. Okay.
Well, whatever. I'm trying to verify a number that he threw out that if it's true, it's totally bad news, and if it isn't true, then I want to know what the real number is. And the number that he threw out was in the derivatives market, there is still a $644 trillion overhang.
No, it's not that big.
I don't know.
And I can find it for you.
Okay.
Clearinghouse. May 29th, 2009. Was that 8? That's 8. Where is it? I know I've got a link here somewhere on it. this way. No. I'm in naked capitalism. I know it's around there somewhere, but I'm... No.
Not there?
No. I'm in Financial Times blog at this point. Because it's in Europe. I found it before. You know what? It's probably taking some time to find it.
Yeah. Okay. Shoot me the URL when you locate it.
Yeah. No, the number I saw recently was in the 230 to 240 trillion dollar range. So I mean, one, it's off of where it was.
Mm-hmm.
Still an astronomical number.
Oh, yeah.
You know, okay, that says 62 trillion, but that's the book value, that's not totaled out there. British Banker Association Credit Derivatives Report, that's what I'm looking for. Come on, give me something more recent.
Yeah, really.
Here's August 2009. Tell me. Not telling me a total out. I'll look it up and find it.
Yep.
But that was a number that was being thrown around a lot last year.
Hmm. Okay.
And I know that a bunch of it's been unwound.
Okay.
And I want to say it was Naked Capitalism, or it could have been Barry Reinholtz's The Big Picture that had a smaller number, but I want to suggest to you that last time I saw it was probably May or June.
Hmm.
So we'll have to see, where that has been, where that might be at this point. Beck strikes me as the same thing as Ann Coulter.
Okay.
I haven't watched them enough to have anything more than just a general opinion about it. Counterparty Risk Index. Oh, can't get in there. Okay, well, that's useless.
Yeah. Well, okay for you.
Yeah. Well, credit derivative news. That might tell you what it is. Oh, CJ found a turtle.
A turtle?
Turtle.
Yeah?
Looks like a baby snapper. It's probably a mud snapper. U.S. commercial banks, $200.4 trillion. This is a report from April. And that's only in the United States. Oh, that better not be right. That better not be right.
Oh, yeah? What's it saying?
Unsurprisingly, while there's been a rise in notational volumes of derivatives contracts in general held by U.S. banks, growing 14% to $200 trillion, the notational value of credit derivatives contracts decreased 2% during the quarter to $15.9
trillion.
Oh, wait a second. Credit derivatives still remain a relatively small segment of the OTC derivatives business. However, they've been dubbed as being responsible for much of the turmoil. The credit derivative contracts in the U.S. formed only 7.9% of the total. That would suggest to me... No, that can't be it. This is the right one. Bank for International Settlement. This is the right one. This is the right place. What's new? Look, $200 trillion cannot be 7% of the market. If $200 billion is 7% of the market, then we've exceeded, over $1,000 trillion.
No, wait, they're saying $200 trillion is the 7% of the market?
Yeah.
I don't know how to say that number.
Yeah. That's about $1,250 trillion.
No, it's
just give me the first four digits.
2,857.
Oh, okay, so that's 2,857.
Two quadrillion, 857 trillion. 142,857,140 bucks. I don't believe that.
Yeah, that's
I mean, that's not believable. I mean, Jesus Christ, if that's true. Nah, we're in even worse shape than I thought we were.
Yeah, that's like, you know, let's, I'm in the right place. Derivatives.
We have for listeners tonight, by the way.
Hand them up. Let's pull
up. Yep.
BIS is the right place. I just gotta figure out how to get to the right place. Stats. Derivatives. Last number they have is fourth quarter.
And that number is what?
$591 trillion.
Well, so his 644 isn't all that far off.
That's the notational amount.
Right.
The market value, they're calling it $33
trillion. Jesus Christ.
Gross credit exposure, $5
trillion. Oh, man. And you know the bad part about that is not one in a million people will understand that. Less than that. God. Oh, we have a fucking nation of illiterates, at least economically. God.
Biggest chunk is in interest rate contracts, which is why Bernanke is holding interest rates where he is.
Mm-hmm.
while he tries
to
unwind some of this stuff.
But, you know, his power to do that is limited.
Oh, no, he can hang it right there as long as he wants. As long as he's got EU and China on board, he's fine. And, of course, you know, EU is in much bigger, worse shape than we are with regard to derivatives and outstanding obligations. They are so fucked up there.
I don't believe that for a minute because the world sets the interest rates. We don't set them.
He can set them. He can set them all day long. You know, and as long as the market keeps buying the damn bills and notes, you know, they're fine. Even if it's they're slightly at higher interest rates than he wants them to be at. You know, as long as he and EU continue to share information, and nobody in the world can tell me those two fuckers aren't talking to each other every 12 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
You know, as long as they stay there, you know, Europe has every reason in the world to keep, you know, doing what they're doing. You know, as soon as one of them blinks, you know, and all you need is a really big default. All you need is one really big default.
Yep.
And I think it's coming. I honestly think it's coming. You know, I don't know where it's going to come from. I really don't know where it's going to come from. I mean, UBS was absolutely in the fucking pike in March, you know, and I don't know where the hell they pulled that shit out of, but they did. You know, and I was waiting for UBS to go under. UBS go under, Citigroup was 2 days behind it.
Yep, yeah.
And, you know, and they just went, you know, nutsoid shit about it, and I'm not certain what they had to do that, but, you know, I mean, on Thursday, everybody was going, you know, don't be in any position you can't be out of on Friday night.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was telling my parents, go get some money out of the bank.
Yep.
You know, and, you know, Monday, you know, everyone was snoozing and sneezing and, you know, and everyone's going like, oh, well, we didn't do anything. Nothing
mm-hmm.
wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm
Going, who, us?
You know, what the hell happened?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Something happened. Something
yes,
absolutely positively happened.
Yep.
And, you know, and I'm sitting there like going, no, I'm not buying this.
No. Don't know what
you
they
know.
Did, but they did something.
They did something.
Yes, they did. Yes,
okay,
they
so
did.
Over-the-counter derivatives is what I'm looking to see if I can find. OTC derivatives. Let's see if I can get. Let's see. Somebody else is looking for this. That's the first half of 08. I bet this isn't useful either. Nope. That's too old. Yeah, you know. They're being really, really closed mouth about this. Here's July of 09.
The dog that did not bark, huh?
They're being surprisingly closed mouth about this.
Well, you know what, then? That judge that just ordered the Fed to disclose secret loans may have just blown the whistle on them. And that just happened either yesterday or today.
know, this is very, very strange. These numbers should be all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Boy, talk about transparent markets, huh?
Lots of people talking about them, but nobody's coming up with numbers.
I wonder what Misha thinks of it. I wonder if he's got a pipeline.
BIS has not issued any OTC derivative market valuations in 2009.
Really?
Now, why would that be true?
Well, a couple of reasons. One, they have no confidence that they can accurately value it. That would be a reasonable explanation.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they're just reporting transactions, right?
That's why they're talking about notional values versus market values.
Exactly. So if they are only reporting reported trades, then one of
go.
The other explanations is a sub rosa market.
The most recent BIS derivative statistic indicates that the first quarter of 2009 saw a continued but limited decline of activity on the international derivatives exchanges. Total turnover on notational amounts decreased further to 366 trillion from 380 trillion. End of 08 were 592 trillion at the end of December versus 684 6 months earlier. Oh, man. Latest BIS international debt security statistics show borrowing in the international debt securities market increased in the first quarter of 2009, reflecting a gradual return of confidence against the background of significant gross issuance. Net issuance increased to $670 billion, up from $519 billion.
Jesus, they just don't learn.
So, the latest number that I have is 366 trillion. That was June of 09. Next report won't come out for another 6 weeks or so.
My sub rosa market better.
Derivative statistics. Yeah. Publication data is nothing more current than first quarter. Credit default swaps.
Mm-hmm.
Quarter one. Total CDS contracts, 41 trillion. Yeah, so at this particular point in time, the answer is about 300 and 66 trillion. About 60% of where we were a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
A 40% drop.
Well, assuming that we believe those numbers and that they comprise the entire market.
Pretty much, the European clearinghouse is just about the one big place where it all clears. I mean, the New York Stock Exchange and the American NASDAQ have opened exchanges, but they're relatively really small comparison. Which is why, when I say that Europe is in a lot bigger trouble, a lot of that stuff is, a lot more of that stuff was done in Europe, with Eastern Europe, than was done here.
Mm-hmm.
On a percentage basis. I mean, the dollar value is going to be higher here, but on a, what is it? UBS itself had more debt than the entire country. That's a bank that can't fail because it's de facto central bank.
Sure.
So, but that's the problem that most of Western Europe has with Eastern Europe is they're absolutely on the hook for it.
Man.
Oh, thank you, Ollie. Oh, my God. Dog.
I got dog beer farts, huh? Oh, Lord. Well, I still have to get dinner here.
Why are you doing that?
Who? Ollie or me?
Oh, switchboard says it's off. It says that you're not there.
Really? Dang. It must have known that I was going for dinner.
All right. Well, I'll take you off. You're gone.
Okay.
See you later.
All righty, guys. Bye.
Bye.